Good morning, University of Manitoba campus, and welcome to UMFM's information and entertainment program, Your Campus Today, for Friday, October the 12th. I'm going to be your host, David Devane. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, we bring you all the U of M news that's fit for your ears, plus keep you in the loop on just a few of the great events going on here at the U of M campus that you need to know about. On today's show, an esteemed U of M professor questions the U of M's traditional territories acknowledgement, the university bestows an honorary degree on Ovid Metgridi, and we speak with Dr. Negan Sinclair about an upcoming lecture series. All this and more coming up next right here on Your Campus Today. Indigenous U of M professor Lara Fitznor expressed concern with the U of M's traditional territories acknowledgement during a lecture on October the 4th. Fitznor, an associate professor at the U of M's Faculty of Education, has been teaching Aboriginal and Indigenous education at the university since 2003. She said that within that time, she had to consider her own position in academia with regard to the U of M traditional territories acknowledgement. "I am happy that the land acknowledgement was done," Fitznor said during the lecture. "That's why I should bring to your attention that the Canadian Association of University Teachers has been working long and hard with Indigenous scholars to start putting forward recognition and wording that recognizes territorial acknowledgement, something that Indigenous peoples have always done. The acknowledgement is read at school events and is meant to show the university's commitment to creating a supportive learning environment for Indigenous people, while recognizing the harm caused to Indigenous people by the settlers in the past." In an interview, Fitznor reiterated that while she supported the usage of the traditional territories acknowledgement, it is not without issues. "We're at the era where the recognition of those past wrongs is happening, and that we're going to try to reshape those institutions in some form," said Fitznor. "Those acknowledgements of the land is one way, but that's just words." The hour-long lecture was titled "Indigenous Education and Understanding Our Positionalities for Bridging Our Worlds for Reconciliatory Efforts." This is the second lecture in the U of M's Indigenous Scholars Speaker Series. Both lectures have raised concerns about the university's approach to reconciliation efforts. On September the 20th, Barry Lavallee hosted a lecture in which he called for U of M President David Barnard to step down. Fitznor also spoke about the need to understand ourselves within the multiple contexts we each inhabit, such as race, class, and gender. The talk explored how reconciliatory efforts require us to see different perspectives, both of others and of ourselves. Fitznor delved into her own life for examples. She explained how her multiple names, her legal name, her Cree name, and a name given to her by Anishinaabe elders, show an example of her place in multiple different worlds, and how her heritage has encouraged her to consider her own positions in relation to issues facing Indigenous people. Fitznor said her position as an educator and at the U of M was part of why she was critical of the acknowledgement's wording. "When I read it, I said, this is not me, because they're saying I'm sorry to you, and when I'm reading it, do I say I'm sorry to myself?" Fitznor explained, "If you read it, you would know, we admit to all the wrongs that were done. Well, I don't admit all the wrongs that were done to myself." Each year, the University of Manitoba bestows honorary degrees upon individuals who have achieved preeminence in the advancement of culture, communications, education, administration, scholarship, leadership, philanthropy, mentorship, and business. During the 51st annual fall convocation of the University of Manitoba on October the 17th, 2018, an honorary degree will be awarded to a tireless advocate for Indigenous rights. Mr. Ovid Metgridi, former National Chief of the Assembly of First Nations, is a highly respected lawyer, negotiator, lecturer, activist, artist, author, and poet. During his decades of advocacy for Indigenous rights, Mr. Metgridi has championed education and chartered a path toward reconciliation. Born into a traditional Cree family in 1946 in Grand Rapids, Manitoba, he learned early on about social injustice. When he was a teenager, his family lost their home and traditional way of life to massive hydro development in their community. This experience ignited young Ovid's political awareness and moved him to pursue higher education at the University of Manitoba in 1970. Without grade 12, he was able to attend the U of M through the Access program. He was a trailblazing student, helping to establish the first Indigenous Students Association in Canada, and as its president, successfully lobbied for a Department of Native Studies. He graduated with a law degree. Inspired by the teachings of notable world leaders who advanced and advocated for nonviolent protest, particularly Mohandas K. Gandhi, Mr. Metgridi formed a strong belief that constitutional law must be the basis for achieving real change for Indigenous peoples in Canada. Mr. Metgridi was elected Manitoba Regional Chief for the Assembly of First Nations in 1989, and soon became a leading advocate for the right to self-government. Not only was he a key strategist in helping defeat the Meech Lake Accord, he played an integral role in resolving the Oka crisis in Quebec. From 1991 to 1997, he served two terms as National Chief of the Assembly of First Nations, representing 1.5 million people from more than 600 bands. Involved in formulating the Charlottetown Accord, Mr. McCurdy addressed the United Nations in both Geneva and New York, and from 2005 to 2011, he brought many improvements to his home community as Chief of the Missipawiskat Cree Nation. Today, Mr. McCurdy is helping to transform health services for those living in the 49 communities of Anishinaabe Aski Nation in Northern Ontario. Mr. McCurdy has been actively involved with the University of Manitoba as an advisor on many issues and received the Distinguished Alumni Award in 2013. The University of Manitoba is proud to award a Doctor of Laws honoris causa to Mr. Ovid McCurdy, a tireless advocate and mentor who guides us on the path to reconciliation. Up next on Your Campus Today, special correspondent Michael Elves is going to be talking to Professor Negan Sinclair in advance of the Dean's Lecture Series event taking place at the Fourth Cafe on Tuesday, October 23rd and presented by Extended Education at the U of M.
All right, well, the Dean's Lecture Series 2018-2019, Education for Social Justice, Creating Opportunity to Make Our Community a Better Place, takes place on Tuesday, October 23rd from noon to 1:30 at Fourth Cafe at 171 McDermott Avenue. And joining us on the phone to discuss it, Negan Sinclair. Welcome to the show, Negan.
Bonjour. Hello.
I'm curious in terms of, obviously, you've spoken in a variety of, media and different places around this topic. But when it comes to, putting together something for a lecture series versus, doing Q&As and panel work and things like that, how to kind of craft things for lecture purpose?
Yeah, I mean, it's not really that complex. I was at an event last night with a Mennonite scholar where we're talking about the duties of being a treaty person, and what does it mean to have a long history of theft, and what does it mean to have a relationship after that theft. And, at the Q&A period, all the questions I think were, directed at me, not because I think anything spectacular that I said, but more that I think there's a thirst in the public for knowledge around Indigenous issues. And as a result, there's been a cacophony, four or five events a day that I do now where I'm speaking regularly on these issues. And being able to come up with a lecture is not all that different than just taking all the questions that I sort of see time and time again and trying to pose them in a frameable way that people can understand, and also tell some stories in there to be able to articulate things on a more straightforward basis. And really, in the end of the day, this lecture series is intended to get us all to think about what does it mean to have a city that's responsible and ethical, and to have a community that acts accordingly.
You mentioned, so you're taking kind of the recurrent questions that you've already been posed and then kind of using that as a frame to hold together sort of a larger discussion or talk then? Is that sort of the basic concept?
Well, this particular series, I mean, there's three different speakers, so it is more of a panel format than anything else.
Okay.
There's the three of us, I think, are getting a small segment to speak at the beginning about what our vision for a meaningful city or a meaningful community looks like, and then we roll off into more of a discussion format where we're posing questions to each other. But when I, whenever I speak anywhere, I think, what is it that the audience needs? What does a specific audience need? What is a specific audience interested in? And then I sort of grade myself accordingly. Like the way that I speak to Indigenous audiences, for example, is very different than the way that I speak to non-Indigenous audiences, or the way that I speak to an audience of women. Indigenous women or non-Indigenous women, it comes with very different issues and challenges and interest topics. And so I'll sometimes pose that audience to the audience, and then I'll go from there, kind of improv style. But in the case of most academic projects, I like to be prepared. So I sort of imagine what the audience is interested in and then go from there.
Right. Now, the title of this lecture series is Education for Social Justice. And I'm curious about your sort of like North Star, as it were, as far as education and its role in social justice. Like, what, where do you see it, and what, like, how do you see it kind of enacted to create social justice?
Well, social justice is a challenge. And, you know, the number one thing that I think Indigenous people seek in this generation anyways is a sense of justice in relation to the situation that we find ourselves in under draconian control, oppressive legislation. And in the case of today, I mean, the Supreme Court today determined that Indigenous peoples don't have to be consulted in the creation of Canada's laws. Mm-hmm. And that kind of ignorance and denial and marginalization is something that we're very familiar with over 150 plus years. And that ongoing oppressive system that continues to pretend as though we don't exist, and that French and English are the only people that actually matter in this country, is exactly what constitutes what we might call social justice, but just mere justice. Social justice is the ways in which we operate with each other. What are the ways in which we see each other and act accordingly? That ranges in everything from stereotypes to workplaces to families. And being able to think about things of what a just society looks like involves all of those different institutions, from the courts to the boardrooms to the living rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, you know, that's education is about encompassing all of that and trying to, you know, encourage people to have brave conversations.
And to think of education as something beyond a classroom setting.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, in everyday life, everyday practice. What I say to people in Manitoba is the reality is that Indigenous peoples are the fastest growing segment of the economy, and we're entering workplaces and the private and public industry faster than anyone else. And as a result, it is the most employable skill in Manitoba is going to be working effectively with Indigenous people. Being negative, being stereotypical, being racist is actually what's holding our economy back, because it is what disrupts effective workplaces and people working together more than anything else. It is archaic views, and often most likely held by Canadians, that are the biggest problem in this economy. Indigenous peoples are not the problem at all. Indigenous peoples are the solution.
Then there could be something said, not the decision just be education, but also re-education, that should be touched on at this lecture series?
Well, you know, it's my experience that Canadians are conditioned to think of themselves justly and to think of themselves as people of fairness and people of kindness. And for the most part, that's true. I mean, social welfare policy and immigration policies and the kind of politeness of the long-held British traditions here in Canada. But, you know, at the core of every major national policy, whether it be democracy or social welfare policy or healthcare or all of, even UN peacekeepers, Indigenous peoples taught Canadians those things. They were the ones who introduced those ideas. It wasn't that people came from Europe with those ideas. It was that they met Indigenous peoples who had the core of those ideas and then built off of them. And so for me, it's that Canadians often know the second part, but not the first part. And the more that we can instruct Canadians on being an understanding that at the core of their identity is an Indigenous center, I think the sooner we will be able to get Canadians to come on board to understand of the innate foundational relationship they have with Indigenous people. So it might be adding to an already existing education, or you might call it re-education. But really, I call it, you know, when I start my Indigenous studies classes, my Native studies classes with students, I say, you're going to learn in this class not just Indigenous pedagogies and practices and institutions and intellectual traditions, but you're actually going to learn about what it means to be Canadian. And that's an important part of, I think, talking about any notion of social justice in these kind of conversations.
Right. You mentioned the Supreme Court decision earlier today. As we record this, there's also a rally that Make Poverty History Manitoba is taking from City Hall to the Manitoba Legislature. And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about the role of poverty and its effects on education and you know, that economic inequality and how it factors into education and social justice.
Yeah, I mean, poverty is just a way of our lives, Indigenous people's lives. We grow up, almost all of us, myself included, grew up on welfare. We grew up at different times in our life struggling to put food on the table. And it's because of oppressive policies that have led us to situations involving having to make bigger, very difficult decisions. Some of those decisions have been to give up one thing to try to get another. And And I give the example of, you could, everyone wants to save indigenous languages. Everybody wants to come up with employability skills so that we can make sure indigenous peoples enter the workforce. And everybody wants to help indigenous peoples get out of the poverty that they're in. But when it comes to setting up programs, if you don't deal with the fact of oppressive legislation and oppressive conditions that live within the everyday life of indigenous peoples, really nothing changes. In fact, you're just throwing money at a problem that won't solve itself. What you're doing is you're setting up the causes for the problems to become exponentially more problematic. If you don't deal with the issues involving the oppression that indigenous peoples face on a daily basis, and that's from the Indian Act still being here, that's from people like the Supreme Court or bodies like the Supreme Court denying indigenous peoples' roles in the country, that goes down to, indigenous peoples not even being recognized as being any contributing member within a community other than some ornamental logo during the Olympics. If you continue to do all of those things, it really doesn't matter how many education programs you set up. Poverty is the, not just poverty, physical poverty, but also poverty of the soul. When we don't build indigenous people into a sense of pride in themselves in relation to the relation to others, it's almost like, what's the point of trying to build several elements and institutions that are trying to give employability skills or get people to enter the workforce? Because in the end of the day, they're not going to feel a sense of pride in being indigenous and being Anishinaabe and being Nahewak. So that's a really crucial element of poverty, is that it disables people to see a vision of themselves into the future.
Well, the Dean's Lecture Series is about looking at a vision of the future. Education for Social Justice, Creating Opportunity to Make Our Community a Better Place, takes place Tuesday, October 23rd from noon to 1:30 p.m. at 4th Cafe at 171 McDermott Avenue. Negan, thanks very much for joining us here on your campus today.
Miigwech, thank you very much.
Students, faculty, and staff at the University of Manitoba, as well as members of the extended U of M community, are encouraged to submit nominations for the UMSU Award for Indigenous Community Leaders. In 2018 to 2019, up to 25 awards will be offered to undergraduate students who meet the requirements, with each award valued at a minimum of $1,000. Highlighting the University of Manitoba's commitment to Indigenous achievement, these awards recognize Canadian Indigenous students who are leaders in their communities and who participate in community service activities and leadership initiatives. The awards are funded through the University of Manitoba Student Union's 16.2 million commitment to support student success at the U of M through the Funded Center campaign. The awards are open to all Canadian First Nations, Métis, or Inuit undergraduate students enrolled either full or part-time in any year of study at the University of Manitoba. Current U of M students must have a minimum 2.0 degree grade point average. Incoming students who are nominated must meet the minimum admission requirements for University 1 or any faculty, college, or school at the U of M with a direct entry option. Nominations letters must be accompanied by a description and explanation of the candidate's community service activities and demonstrated leadership qualities. Nominations are to be submitted in hard copy to Financial Aid and Awards, Room 422, UMSU University Center, by 4:30 p.m. on December 1st, 2018, or by 4:30 p.m. on the following business day. For more information, visit the Financial Aid and Awards Searchable Awards Database. Creating pathways to Indigenous achievement is an institutional priority for the University of Manitoba, with a goal to celebrate achievements by Indigenous faculty, staff, students, alumni, and community partners. Indigenous achievement is a pillar of the Front and Center campaign, the campaign for the University of Manitoba, with $65 million directed toward this priority. By collaborating with Indigenous communities and stakeholders, the University of Manitoba is striving to be a welcoming place that translates into success for Indigenous students and their families. Cardiovascular science pioneer Dr. Naranjan S. Dalla from the University of Manitoba and St. Boniface Hospital Albrechtsen Research Center is being inducted into the Canadian Medical Hall of Fame in recognition of extraordinary contributions to health. Dr. Dalla, a distinguished professor at the Rady Faculty of Health Sciences, is a founding leader of two worldwide organizations of cardiovascular science, the International Society of Heart Research and the International Academy of Cardiovascular Sciences. Dr. Dalla's career of teaching and research is to be commended, said Dr. Digvir Jayas, Vice President, Research and International, and Distinguished Professor. His influence on the field of cardiovascular science has been transformative globally as a result of his numerous contributions. He is a true visionary leader and most deserving of this prestigious recognition. In a career spanning more than 50 years, his work has helped to ensure that the benefits of scientific knowledge are shared globally. In 2001, Dr. Dalla was instrumental in drawing more than 2,000 professionals to Winnipeg for a meeting of the World Heart Congress, helping to establish Canada as a center of cardiovascular science and research. Dr. Dalla was director of the Institute of Cardiovascular Science at St. Boniface Hospital, a Brexen Research Center in Winnipeg for 19 years, trained more than 150 graduate students and postdoctoral fellows, edited/authored more than 50 books, and has presented at more than 500 conferences worldwide. He also served as editor-in-chief of the journal Molecular and Cellular Biochemistry. Dr. Dalla is one of six individuals being inducted into the CMHF at a ceremony in Montreal in May 2019. The Canadian Medical Hall of Fame is proud to welcome these six individuals whose outstanding contributions to health have made Canada and the world a better place, said Dr. Bryce Taylor, chair of the CMHF.
So I'm Jason Pajak with Sports, and a mistake off the field for the Regina Rams has big implications for the U of M Bison's football team. News broke Friday that the Rams would forfeit their first five games of the season after playing an ineligible player. The Rams, formerly in second at 3-2, dropped to the bottom of the Canada West standings at 0-5. The Bisons are now tied for second at 3-2 and are back in playoff contention. For our team, it's not necessarily the way you want to win football games, Bison football quarterback Des Cattelier said. We would rather go out and outright win the game, but this is exactly what our team needed right now. According to a release by Canada West, the Rams became aware of the ineligibility during the conference bye week. The mistake stems from what Canada West refers to as an oversight during Regina's student-athlete intake and eligibility process over the summer, and Regina will be doing a full review of their intake process as a result. I'm sad to see a team have to lose all their wins and all their hard work because of a mistake like this, Cattelier said. I know how much hard work goes into a season, and it's sad to see it go that way. The Bisons now have a strong chance to make the playoffs. The Calgary Dinos have already clinched a playoff berth with a perfect 5-0 record, and a single win may just be enough for the herd. This puts us in a very good position for the playoffs and even gives us a track to get a home playoff game, Cattelier said. That all being said, there are three games left in the season and we have to go out there and handle our business. No games are going to be easy and we have to start playing our best football now. Manitoba has a tough schedule ahead, taking on the undefeated Dinos on Friday, the 3-2 University of Saskatchewan Huskies on October 20th, and rounding out the schedule against the UBC Thunderbirds at home on October 27th.
And that does it for us here this week on Your Campus Today. We're going to be closing out our show with a track from the Jaywood, who performed at the West End last night for the Pledge-O-Rama kickoff. This is Another Life. Thanks for listening, everybody. And remember to donate to UMFM during Pledge-O-Rama 2018, which kicks off tonight at 6:30 p.m. Call 204-474-7027 or hit up umfm.com/donate. I'm going to be off for a week, but I am going to be involved with Pledge-O-Rama. So, again, make sure to donate, make sure to come in, make sure to call. We're trying to raise money. We're trying to make the station better. It is 100% listener-supported. And I personally will be back Monday, October the 22nd. And as always, I've been me, you've been you. My name is David Tafane, and this has been Your Campus Today. Girls can't lead to motives, just trying to move your feet.
happening still? Is this just a playground? Even though we can find no way to be closer or end in town, we simply choose to drift away. It's a state of fading out. Lately, the things that I don't show.
Your Campus Today is a collaborative production between UM Today, the Manitoban, the Department of Student Life, and this station, UMFM 101.5. Thanks for listening, folks. If you have a story you'd like us to feature or want to send in feedback, please email us at campustoday@umfm.com.